It is a Thursday. Dan Riskin is here. And for the first time in weeks, we're not going to talk about the eclipse. Good morning to you, Dan.
But can we? No, I won't do it. I won't do it. How are you?
We're going to do that again in a couple of years.
I'm sure.
Yeah. From Spain. A couple of really interesting things to talk about, though, as we sit here in a city that is growing by leaps and bounds and expanding, and so interesting in Ottawa, where there's a green belt around what was kind of going to be the main part of the city, and now so many people live in all of the areas that are outside of that green belt and expands.
Yeah.
How do we kind of keep track of all that and the growth in cities and defined cities? There's some talk about cell phone data being really, really instrumental in that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're somebody that studies cities, if you're somebody that tries to come up with real scientifically based answers to tough questions about transit or distribution of goods or where you put an airport or questions like that, it's really helpful to compare cities to one another and to compare cities of similar size. But, you know, cities are different shapes and sizes. And, you know, I live in Toronto. So if you're going to talk about the city I live in, are you going to talk about Toronto? Are you going to talk about East York, which is the part of Toronto I live in? Or are you going to talk about the GTA, which really extends all the way to Hamilton in one direction and goes pretty far in the other way too and goes up? And like, you have to go quite a ways before you're between cities from where I live. And Ottawa is definitely moving in that direction as well. There's a bunch of different places that used to be separate and you have to travel between them, and now they sort of are starting to merge. And so for researchers, they want something unambiguous that they can use, not just for Canadian cities, but like China, right? Where growth is on a different scale altogether. How do you compare city sizes? And so what this new proposal is really clever. It's to use cell phone data. You can use anonymized cell phone data, which is available, and you can use that to sort of say, okay, well, where does not only where are people, because that's part of it, but you already kind of have a sense of that from where all the houses are, but where are people moving? So what's really interesting is if everybody in Kanata is staying in Kanata all day and not making their way into downtown Ottawa, that's a very different city that has very different needs from if the people who live in Kanata are going into Ottawa every day and back and forth, but people who live, say, in Gatineau aren't making that same trip. Then Gatineau becomes something different, and Kanata and Ottawa become part of the same sort of piece of the puzzle. And so this way of using anonymized cell phone data and the way people move to come up with sort of boundaries of what really is a city or what's functioning as a city, no matter what the municipal limits are, can be really helpful, especially for those kinds of comparisons.
Interesting. Yeah. And I guess we have so much geography here. It's easier for us to sort of define it to ourselves as we're driving along because we're used to those major gaps between cities. But when you talk about China, or you talk about like Lebanon, I was in Lebanon in June and we were in Beirut and we were going out to the country to visit some family in the country. Well, I'm like, well, where does the country start? We're still seeing houses. We're still seeing buildings. All of a sudden, okay, we're in a village, but we never actually went on a highway with any sort of country feel to it in my estimation, right? So, but are those people living their separate lives out there in the country, or are they actually coming into Beirut every day? That's sort of some of that, what that phone data would help you ascertain.
Totally. And and for Ottawa, I mean, you talk about the geography, but wouldn't it be cool to see that the rivers really are separating people? Like, maybe there really is a big difference between Gatineau and Ottawa. Maybe the only a trickle is going across that, and most of that movement is happening within those two blobs. And you could quantify that. And you could also see how it changes over time. Or maybe you want to make some kind of a policy change so that you can encourage more people to make that trip so that you can help, you know, economically things moving across or something. Like, maybe you want to see more economics moving between two places. Those kinds of data can help you sort of see how that movement's happening just by looking at cell phones. And, you know, the thing about Canada is we are a big country and we're diverse and we're huge and all that stuff. But compared to other parts of the world, we really are just a tiny drop in the bucket. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at the Greater Bay Area of China, which is where Guangdong City and Hong Kong and Macau are, I mean, there are 86 million people living in that area. And as big as the 7 million of Toronto is, 86 million is a whole different ballgame, right? That's more than 10 times more. So, you know, these kinds of mathematical tools become even more important where, like, how do you possibly wrap your head around all the different municipalities and special city districts, never mind the, you know, the government of China and its way of sort of like twisting things to tell the story it wants to tell. If you've got unambiguous cell phone data, it's much easier to make a comparison between that area and Ottawa, you know, despite their different sizes, to see if you can see some of the same mechanisms happening.
And the one example that you brought up there, Ottawa to Gatineau, is such an interesting one here, because we used to refer to ourselves, when Gatineau was Hull, we used to refer to ourselves as Ottawa Hull all the time, and operate in much more of a one city sort of mode. And during COVID, it was a fascinating time, because all of a sudden the borders were closed between provinces, and you couldn't travel back and forth. And, you know, if you had a sheet saying you needed to cross over for work and you had essential work, because most people were at home, you could. But I know so many people who moved afterwards because they realized their city was Ottawa. They just happened to be living in Gatineau. And if they couldn't come across to visit family or to do everything else that they needed to be doing, then that scared them, that was the possibility that they might actually be cut off from that. So it's interesting in how we sort of define those things and look at
those
things.
There are so many neat stories that come out. I mean, now that pandemic is sort of behind us, I know you're not allowed to say that, but I like to say it anyway. We can look back on and see all these strange things that happen. I have a friend who is a professor, and he had arranged to have a year of sabbatical in Paris. And the pandemic hit. He managed to get into Paris with his wife and his daughter. And in France, they just locked the borders to all the other countries. And so he had these plans for the year that they were going to travel to all these other countries. They couldn't, but they ended up having Paris kind of to themselves. There were no tourists from anywhere else in the world. And so they had days where they could go to the Louvre and be the only people in front of the Mona Lisa. And they got to travel around to rural parts of France. So it really worked out, you know, quite, they had a really nice pandemic experience. I wish we all could have something to look back on it with that kind of fondness.
Yeah, if you have to get stuck somewhere.
Yeah, if you're going to get stuck somewhere, Paris is okay.
Absolutely. I'm trying to figure out how I can get back there for the Olympics. Love Paris. Okay, want to talk about this real quick, this study about dating apps. And so, okay, all of our kids do Snapchat all the time, right? And they're just, why are you taking a picture? You're just in the car and nothing's happening. Oh, it's just Snapchat. It's just going to disappear. It's whatever. Mm. And if you go on Instagram, you have that option. If you're messaging someone, you can send them. And this, I'm sure this happens with the risque stuff all the time, but it disappears. When you are using dating apps and whatnot, I mean, does stuff really disappear? And what do those vanishing photos make it possible to do when you're out there on the dating apps and in all of that world right now?
Yeah, I guess the first thing I should say is anytime any picture goes across the internet to anywhere, you can assume that it may not disappear, right? No matter what you're doing. So if this is your plan, that you're going to send a picture that you don't ever want to see published all over the internet and go viral, don't trust any of these apps, because somebody could take a screen grab or whatever. There's just ways that could bite you in the rear end. But that said, a lot of people feel more comfortable sending certain kinds of pictures, not necessarily risque ones, but even pictures of their own face, if they know it's going to disappear, because they just don't want it to be permanent. And with dating apps, there is this issue called the cold start problem, where people are nervous about a new, you know, it's an introduction to a new person. They might turn out to be no good at all. I don't want to give them too much information about myself. I don't need to give them tons of pictures of my face. I don't want to give them all this stuff that is now going to be out there and they're going to have. So a lot of people have a lot of resistance to sharing their data, but a Chinese dating app tried in like having these disappearing pictures go into the app, and they saw a huge improvement in not only how many pictures people were sending, but also how many matches they were making. And so this might be a really great tool for other apps to be starting to integrate, where they use to help people who are nervous about sending that first picture. If you know that picture is going to disappear, maybe it just helps you get over the hump.
Or is it taking commitment phobia to a whole new level? I kind of like you, but only for 10 seconds or whatever.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody's got their kink. That's all good.
All right. Good stuff. Interesting stuff as always, Dan. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.
Dan Riskin, our CTV science and technology specialist.